Accession number 20009, Reel 4.
Les Perry, Reel 4.
Yeah, we just got to sleep, and this battery of guns opened up in the field next, and our blokes went mad. We were more than annoyed because we'd been under fire for 3 weeks. We'd come out, we were told we were going to have a 24-hour rest, and then they'd disturbed our sleep, and we weren't very happy bunnies. But this officer came over and pointed out that this was war, and you've just got to put up with it. So the next day, we moved forward to the Chateau de la Londe. We were going to attack the Chateau de la Londe. The day before, the South Lancs, well, no, previous to that, on the 22nd, the South Lancs had attacked the Chateau de la Londe and they'd taken it, but they were counterattacked and driven out, and they had quite a few losses. On the 27th, they went in again with tanks, and they had a Churchill flamethrower with them as well, and all the tanks got knocked out because when the Germans reinforced the chateau, they brought in tanks all the way around it and all the hedgerows around it, and there was between 30 and 40 tanks all dug in with just holes above the ground, and the chateau itself, the Germans had blown holes in the wall, in the surrounding wall, and set up machine gun positions. And as our lads went across the field, it was an open cornfield. They were just mowing them down. So on the 27th, I think previously I said that we had a bath on the 27th. That must have been the 26th. But on the 27th, they went in again. Yeah, with the tanks, and they were again repulsed. So it was decided that on the 28th of June, the Suffolks and the East Yorks would go in. The Suffolks would take the chateau and surrounded fields, and the East Yorks would be on our right to take the fields up to the main road, which ran down to from Caen to Luxemere. And on the other side of the road, the 9th Brigade had already penetrated up to this position, and on the other side, the 185 Brigade had penetrated up to Labizi Wood, and it had left a salient in the middle with the chateau in the middle. So the chateau had to be taken because it was being used as a German headquarters. And we were told we would go in on the following day. We were told it's no good sending tanks in because the Germans have got all their anti-tank guns in position. They've got all their tanks in the position. No good at using tanks. So we were told we would go in behind a creeping barrage. At 4:10 on the morning of the 28th of June, the barrage opened up. Now, we were told it would be the whole of the Corps artillery would be supporting us in this attack, and the barrage would lift 100 yards every 5 minutes. So we had B Company and C Company were the two forward companies. The East Yorks were on our right, and they was on the start line, and then as the barrage opened up, they waited for it to lift 100 yards, and then they moved forward. And they would move forward into the cornfield. Well, obviously, the Germans knew that behind that barrage was the infantry. So some of our stuff was falling short. The Germans knew that the infantry would be behind. They was lobbing over the top of it, and it was all dropping amongst our boys. And I was on control set that morning, and the message came through that we were being shelled by our own artillery. So I got onto the guns, and I called up the gunners and I said, lift your barrage, you're dropping short. And I don't know if it was on the other side. He said, we can't do that. I said, you've got to lift your barrage. You're falling short. You're killing our own men. And then an officer came on. He said, who's speaking? I said, Private Perry, 1st Suffolk. He said, well, I am Major so-and-so, he said, of the Royal Artillery. He said, and you cannot order me to lift my barrage. I said, sir, you are killing our own men. He said, the only person that can tell me to lift my barrage is the divisional commander. You tell your men to pull back, they're too far forward. I thought, myself, well, what a way to win a bloody war. But there you are, that is war. Anyway, we eventually took the chateau, and we lost 161 men. 34 were killed, 12 taken prisoner, and the rest were wounded. And the East Yorks on our right lost 109 men altogether. We advanced 500 yards and we took one chateau. There was quite a few medals won that day as well, but one of our officers, Lieutenant Woodward, knocked out a German tank with a pier. Another one, Captain Brown of the Canadian Army, he was on can loan. A can loan was junior officers, Canadian officers loaned to the British Army because they had a surplus. And he jumped on the back of a German tank and knocked on the cover, and the head came up. He was going to tell the tank to fire on a German machine gun position. Then he realised it was a German. He jumped down and dropped into a slit trench, and the gunner turned the turret to get a shot at him because they couldn't see him. He'd vanished. He was only about 10, 15 yards in front of them, but he was in the slit trench and they couldn't see him. And he just laid doggo until they went. And as he pulled out, this Lieutenant Woodward hit it up the back with a pier, knocked it out and killed it. But it just shows that when you're in close proximity, infantry to tanks, things get very, very confused. We consolidated the position, and we were there. Well, I was there till the 5th of July when I was wounded. The battalion were there, I think, they were there when the bombing went on at Caen on the 7th of July. And then I think they were pulled out of the line, and then they went round in Operation Goodwood, I think it was, support of the Operation Goodwood. But by that time, I was back in this country, wounded. I was very interested in what was going on, but of course, I knew that I wouldn't be able to take any further part.
Can you tell me your own personal story from the attack on the chateau to you're being wounded, please?
Yeah.
And then take me through the details of how it happened.
During the morning of the attack, it had all quietened down. And the commanding officer was talking to the second in command and the signal officer. And the commanding officer said, I must go forward and find out what's happening. So he said to the signal officer, I need a signaller. So the signal officer said to me, Perry, hand over the control set to somebody else and take the spare set and go with the commanding officer. So I got the set on and made sure it was working, and away we went. We went through an orchard, and there was about 8 Sherman tanks in there, all been knocked out the day before, and they was all burnt. And we went through this orchard, and then we turned right and went up a hedgerow. And then we saw the chateau in front of us with the wall, this wall. And there was a great big hole in the wall. It looked to me as though a tank had gone through it or something. There's a great big hole in the wall. Anyway, the CO said, right, through here, signals. So he darted in and I followed him in. And just then, a German opened up with a machine gun. And we could hear the bullets whistling through the grass. He screamed at me, down, signals. I dropped into a trench and he dropped into another one. But my luck, I was in the German latrine trench, and they'd slung all tin food tins and what have you. But as I'm kneeling in there, I'm gradually sinking in the mire. which wasn't very pleasant. But that was preferable to being fired at by that German machine gun. Anyway, after a couple of minutes, the CO said, "You all right, Signal?" So I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Well, come on, let's get out of here." So he jumped out and ran the other side of the wall, and then we went back to headquarters. It was all quiet, and then time, we were lost for time that day. Time meant nothing to us. But sometime during the day, a chap came back, and he was shell-shocked. And he said, "Where's the CO?" So we took him over to the CO, and he said, "Sir," he said, "Lieutenant Woodward is with C Company." He said, he hasn't got many men. If we're counterattacked, he can't hold on. He needs reinforcements." So the CO turned to second in command. He said, "You'll have to go forward and clarify the position." So once again, it's Perry, take the spare set. So put the spare set on, went up with his second in command. He's got his revolver out and he's creeping along his hedgerow. And a German tank came up to the hedgerow and his gun came right across the top, right above where we were. And it fired at some chaps in a couple of fields away. And he looked at me and then he said, "I'll have to go back and report this to the CO." He said, "There's tanks in the facility. I'll have to report this back to the CO." He turned, he said to his backman, "Come on." And he ran as fast as he could down the hedgerow, left me with the spare set right on the wall of the chateau. Well, anyway, this tank withdrew. And then I went forward a little bit further and I saw some men digging some slit trenches. And I saw one of my mates, he lived near me, the man that I referred to earlier on that used to go to my house to have his Sunday dinner. And he was sitting in the bottom of the trench and he was in a hell of a state. So I said, "What's wrong with you?" He said, "I've had it." He said, "I can't take any more, I've had it." I said, "Don't be stupid, man." So he said, "Are you all right?" So I said, "Yeah, of course I'm all right." "Oh, if you're all right, I'm all right," he said. And he jumped up. I said, "Here, have a swig out of my water bottle." So he had a drink. I said, "Now you're all right now?" "Yeah, I'm all right," he said. He said, "If you're all right, I'm all right." Because he always had a man that had a superiority complex. And he always felt that he was that one little bit better than me. And if I was all right, he was all right. Well, in that case, I was glad he was because it pulled him out of it.
What state was he actually in? What were the symptoms?
Well, apparently what had happened that the day before, he had felt his leg was itching. His calf muscle was itching. So he took his gaiter off and pulled his trousers up and he'd got a scab either side of his calf. So he showed it to one of the NCOs. He said, "You've been hit." He said, "Go back and see the MO. So he went back to the MO, and the MO said, "Oh, it's all right, it's healing up. It's not infectious. He said, "You can go back up forward." So he went back, and then he got caught in this barrage and this attack on the chateau with blokes going right, going down, right, left and centre. And he was in a shell shock condition. He said he couldn't take any more. But anyway, he did pull round, and he was all right after that because he was made up to corporal in the field, and he was running a section after that. So he was he recovered okay.
Was he a rifleman?
Yes. Yeah. I was told to see if I could find C Company. Incidentally, when I got to these men, there was only 21 men left out of that company. And then I yelled out, "C Company." So a voice said, "We're over here." So I said, "Signals." I said, "Who are you?" He said, "Lieutenant Woodward." I said, "Signals, sir." I said, "I've been told to report to you." So he said, "Right." He said, "We'll give you cover and fire." He said, "And run like hell." So I suppose I had about 50, 75 yards to run. But with an 18 set on your back, it's a bit awkward. But anyway, they opened up and I ran like hell, and I jumped into this trench, and it was a big square trench where a German tank had been in. They dug these big holes with a ramp, and they backed the tank down, turned the gun and the turret around to fire at you coming across the field. Anyway, he had pulled out, had got halfway across this small orchard when Lieutenant Woodward had knocked him out. But he said, you all right then, lad? So I said, yeah, I'm all right, sir. He said, you want a drink? So I said, what you got? He said, well, the Germans have left us some brandy here. He said, they've left us a small keg of brandy. So I said, I'll have some of that, sir. God, I wasn't a drinker in those days. Well, I'm not a drinker now, but I didn't used to drink. So he gave me, give us your mug, and I'll give him a mug, and he gave me, you know, quite a 2 or 3 inches in the bottom of my mug. Of course, I took a swig of it and nearly knocked my head off. Well, I was spluttering. But I think it did me all right, but I couldn't drink it all. I passed it on to somebody else. And we stayed there until reinforcements came up. And they didn't come up until the night, but there were 7 men left out of that company. And there was 21 out of one company and 7 out of the other. There might have been one or two others around, you know, scattered around, had got split up. But the battalion did take a bashing that day. Further on from that, we were in that position, and we were sending out patrols every night because we were watching the Germans and they were watching us. And the slightest movement, we would shell each other. You know, we had a forward observation officer with us, and they obviously had the same. And slightest movement, and they would shell us, or we would shell them. As I say, we were shelled every day, right up to the 5th of July, from the 6th of June to the 5th of July. And this particular day, we'd got a very heavy barrage came over. They'd got our position pinpointed, and after it had finished, after the barrage had finished, I looked out of my trench, and I've got a shell hole 3 foot to the side of my trench, and another one 2 foot to the end of the trench. And there were shell holes right the way along the position, which was a hedgerow at the corner of this cornfield. I picked up the phone, and it was dead. So I said to my mate, I said, well, look, you open up on the radio. I said, I'll go back to meet the boys coming out from headquarters. I said, because it's getting dark. I said, and if we don't maintain communication, it means we've got to be on the radio all night. So he said, yeah, all right. So I went back. I suppose I'd gone about, I don't know, maybe 75 yards. I'd repaired about 10 to 12 breaks in the line, which was a stupid thing to do, really, because we really wanted a new line. But anyway, when you've been under fire like that, you can't think straight. Anyway, I've got my rifle in my right hand. I'm running the line through my left hand, and I'm running along this hedgerow. And all of a sudden, the line went out into the corn. Now, I should have known, with hindsight, you never lay a signal line across a cornfield. Anyway, I followed it, and all of a sudden, there's this terrific bang, and I went up. I can remember seeing it, it's as plain as it happened yesterday. Running along, and all of a sudden, I was flying through the air. There was a big plume of blue smoke. There was clods of earth all going up. My rifle was spinning in the air. I was spinning in the air. And I came down and landed on my side of my head and my right shoulder. And my one thought is that they started shelling again. And I hobbled over and tried to get into a slit trench. I sat on the side of it, and as soon as I got there, 4 stretcher bearers pounced on me. It's all right, lad, take it easy, they said. Take it easy, you're all right. So I said, get under cover, quick, get under cover. They started shelling. Get under cover. So I said, no, you're all right, take it easy. So anyway, they started to dress my wounds, and the whole of my right trousers leg, half the left leg had gone, the whole of my arm, my right arm, and half my blouse had gone. And what was there was all smouldering, and the flesh was covered in lacerations, dirt, all burnt from the blast. I couldn't hear anything. My right ear was perforated in 7 places. And I must admit, I was in a bit of a state. They took me back. And when I recovered and came out of hospital and I went back to Bury St Edmunds, the first man I saw was one of the stretcher bearers. I didn't recognise him, but he recognised me. He said, "I don't know, mate." He said, "You made it then." So I said, "Yeah, I think so." So he said, "Well, you know that day we picked you up? He said, we took you to the ROP and we all said, he's a goner. He's got too much shock. He can't get over that. He's got too much shock." I said, "Well, they can't kill a good ones, can they, mate?" I mean, you know, we made a joke of it. But, and he said, "Do you know what?" He said, "As we were taking you back," he said, "you were trying to sing." So I said, "Was I?" So he said, "Yeah." He said, "Why were you trying to sing?" I said, "Because I was trying to make myself look stupid by crying." I said, "I didn't want to cry." I said, "But I felt like I wanted to, but I didn't want to." He said, "I didn't want to let myself down." He said, "You did all right, mate." Anyway, they took me back to the RAP, and they laid me down. I think it was a barn or something that we were in. And a chap came up. He said, "Would you like a cup of tea, lad?" So I said, "Yes, please, mate." So he went, got this. He bought this drinker cup, you know, with the spout on, gave me a drink. 2 or 3 minutes after that, I was sick. So he came out to me and says, I said, "I'm sorry, mate." I said, "I wouldn't have done that for a while." I said, "You've got too much to do to worry about me being sick." He said, "Oh, don't worry about that." He said, I'll put something in it to make you sick." He says, "You're just going down for an operation." So they carried me out and they went into a big marquee which was sunk in the ground, sunk in about 4 foot in the ground with just the top showing. And they put the stretcher on 2 trestles, and this officer came out and looked at it and said, "Oh my God, look at this lot." And the next, I don't remember anything else, everything, you know, mask over the face, and I was gone. I woke up next morning, and this orderly came up, and the chap next to me was screaming. And this orderly came up and said, "What's wrong with him, mate?" So he said, "Oh," he said, "he's been gut shot." He said, "All his privates have been blown away," he said, "and he's in a hell of a state." He said, "We know he's not going to make it." So I said, "Well, can't you put him out of his misery?" He said, "We're not supposed to," he said, "but we're going to." He said, the MO is just finishing his breakfast. He said, "He's been operating all night." He said, "And then when he's had his breakfast, he's going to come and do the necessary." So they took me back. A little after that, stretcher bearers came in and put me in an ambulance. And I went across this ploughed field. And I don't know where we was. It must have been back. It must have been at Aramanch, I think. And they put me in this building, which went right to a point. I can remember it distinctly. And they put me down, right down in the point. And there was a nursing sister, or 2 or 3 nursing sisters in there. And there's chaps coming and going, taking stretches all the time. And then the sergeant came in. He says, "I can take one more. I can take one more sister." He said, "She said, have you got all the fractures?" He said, "Yes." He said, "I've got all the fractures." She said, "Take that young one down in the corner." So he came over to me. He looked at me and said, "How old are you, lad?" I said, "I'm 18, sergeant." He said, "You'll do." They picked me up, took me out, put me on a duck, and we went out into the hospital ship. And it was nearly full by the time I was loaded on there. Because they'd got all the bunks all the way around and everything, and I was then sort of all the stretchers down on the floor in the wall. So the sister came up and I called her over and I said, "Sister, can you do something for me?" I said, "I'm a terrible sailor." I said, "I know I'm going to be sick." I said, "And I don't want to make a mess." I said, "Can you knock me out?" So she said, "Yes, certainly." So I'm lying there and I'm looking at the clock and it was 10 to 12. She came up, she said, "Come on out." She stuck it in my arm, she said, "There, you'll be all right." So next thing I knew, I wake up, and I'm looking at the clock, and I said to the bloke next to me, "What sort of bleeding sister is she?" So I said, he said, why? He said, I asked her to knock me out. He said, she did. I said, she didn't. I said, I've only been out 10 minutes. He said, it's 12 o'clock at midnight, you plonker. He said, we're in Portsmouth Harbour and they're just unloading us. So they took us out and they put us on rollers off the ship. And of course, I started shouting because all my buttocks being raw and they're going over these rollers. And one of the blokes says, take it easy, mate. He said, we're doing our best. So I said, all right, mate, sorry. They took me to Hazelmere, to a Canadian clearing station. And we were there for the night. And next morning, the sisters came round and they gave us a wash and what have you. And one of them looked at me and said, are you all right, lad? So I said, yes, sister. I said, I don't know how to say this. She said, what? I said, my arse and half sore. She said, well, what's wrong? So she said, let's have a look. And she had a look. She said, my God, she said, your buttocks are raw. She said, you're lying on a steel stretcher. She said, why didn't you tell us? So I said, well, I said, no good at complaining. I said, we've all got a job to do. I said, you've got too much to do now. So she said, do you know, if you was one of our lads, she said, you'd be screaming your head off for assistance and somebody to look after you. She said, but you British boys, just lay there and take it. She said, I can't understand you British boys. I said, well, we don't complain. She said, no, you don't. She said, but you should. And from there, they took us down to the train. And it was a hospital train. And we shunted into a siding. And there was an air raid on. And a bloke came along and they said, they're along the track and they said, where are we, mate? He said, it's Clapham Junction. They said, we've got an air raid on. He said, we've had to halt the train. So we were there for a while and then the all clear went and they took us up and we went up to, I went to Nottingham General Hospital. And we arrived up there about 8 o'clock at night. And they unloaded us, took us up to the hospital. And they put us in this ward, and they put me in a bed right next to the door. So they made us comfortable, and the sister said, could you eat anything? So I said, no, sister. She said, when did you have your last meal? I said, I can't remember. I said, about 2 days ago, I think. I said, but I've been sick since then. She said, well, could you drink anything? Well, putting on a brave act, I said, yeah, I could kill a dirty big pint. And I didn't drink. I wasn't a drinking man. So she said, well, I can't give you a dirty big pint. She said, but I can give you a glass of Guinness. And she bought me this glass of Guinness. And honestly, it was just like drinking cream. It was marvellous. But they went away. They then went off duty. And a short while after that, I got friendly with one of the nurses. She was only, well, it's only about my age, actually. And we got talking there one day. She said, you know that day when you was brought in? So I said, yeah. She said, we made you comfortable. She said, and then we went down to supper. She said, sister got her supper. She said, and then she suddenly looked at it and she said, you burst out crying. She said, it's terrible. All those young men, all been wounded, all been mangled like that, she said. And that young one, Perry, she said, he'll be dead in the morning. She said, he's got so much shock that he can't survive. She said the shock will kill him. And when she came the next morning, my bed was the first one she made for. And she said, are you all right, lad? So I said, yes, sister. Mind you, I was still dopey, mind you, because, you know, my head wasn't clear. And she went away smiling. But I was in there for...